Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The Wall Street Journal this morning starts right after this.
You just watched the market close in Shanghai. New York doesn't open for a couple of hours, so there's time to fit in a session at the gym, squeeze in a haircut, go hit a few balls at the driving range, shoot off some emails, and maybe even breakfast across town. And you'll still be the first one in the office. You're always ready to go the extra mile. Fortunately, so is your Cadillac. With Cadillac Certified Service, our experts make sure your Cadillac is as ready to go as you are.
Get AC Delco Professional DuraStop brake pads installed for only $99.95 or less per axle. Includes rotor inspection, retail customers only, turning or replacing rotors, all other services, and tax extra. Visit CadillacCertifiedService.com for details, other great offers, and to find your closest Cadillac dealer.
Direct from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal This Weekend with Gordon Deal.
The Rand Paul issue. I'm Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Thanks for spending some time with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
Kentucky Senator Rand Paul is calling for the U.S. to be less involved in overseas affairs. That's creating unease in some GOP circles. How will Republicans respond?
What will the new EPA rule mean for renewable energy like wind and solar power?
Researchers are looking at new ways for us to track elderly relatives without the intrusiveness of a camera.
And the effort to allow all-terrain vehicles on public roads.
Since counties are coming up with rules on their own, for example, one county may say you have to have headlights and taillights and a driver's license, but another county may say headlights, taillights, and also helmet, for example. So it's not uniform. And so there is a push to have more uniform rules.
Wall Street Journal reporter Jim Carlton on the push to give ATVs more access. That story is later in the hour. At a time when many Republicans are trying to portray President Obama as someone who has undermined America's global leadership position with his cautious engagement in hotspots around the world like Syria or Russia, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who has eyes on the White House, advocates an approach that might be even more cautious. Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau Chief Jerry Seib says Republicans are trying to deal with what he calls the Rand Paul conundrum. Jerry, how do you see this?
Well, Rand Paul is a very intriguing character, but he's both shaking up the party and worrying the party at the same time. He's obviously the junior senator from Kentucky, a guy who combines appeal to the Tea Party wing of the party and the libertarian instincts he inherited from his father, Congressman Ron Paul, who ran for president a couple of times. And he's very much on the 2016 presidential radar screen. And he is bringing some definite assets to that that are coveted within the party. He has a way, because of his libertarian streak, to appeal to some voters that others in the party don't reach, particularly young voters, college campus voters. He's popular there. And he's made a really concerted effort to reach out to minorities that seem to be ever further from the grasp of other Republican politicians, African-Americans and Hispanics. But at the same, so all that's good from the Republican point of view. But at the same time, he scares the party because he's promoting a view of foreign policy that's very much not in the party mainstream. It's, some would call it isolationist. He, Senator Paul, certainly doesn't call it that. But it's a view of the world in which he proposes extreme caution and some reticence about getting involved in spats overseas. Some see this as a retreat from global leadership, and it's awkward for the Republicans right now because they're busy trying to criticize President Obama for having retreated too far from active participation in resolving conflicts around the world. But one of the most prominent new faces in their own party is, if anything, even more reticent to get involved.
Is Senator Paul's stance on foreign policy helping him attract young voters but angering higher-ups in the Republican Party?
It may be attracting broader support, and by the time we get to 2016, we'll find out. But we at the Wall Street Journal and NBC News asked in a poll a few weeks ago whether people wanted to get essentially more involved or less involved in foreign affairs or continue the level of involvement that the U.S. has now. And 47%, almost half, obviously, said they thought the U.S. should be less involved in foreign affairs. And so you feel a little bit of war weariness and a little bit of fatigue that's born of the economic shocks of the last 5 or 6 years. And so as a result, there is a certain amount of this let's pull back sentiment that may be popular beyond just, say, young people or libertarians. It may be a broader streak, but it's definitely at odds with a kind of traditional Republican view of being active on the foreign stage and relatively interventionist to stop threats before they materialize. Certainly that was the view of George W. Bush, the last Republican president, and Rand Paul is saying something quite different.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau Chief Jerry Seib. Any indication of how Republican leaders might react if Rand Paul did actually get the nomination?
You know, it's hard to say. I'm sure they would figure out a way to rally around. And one of the things that Senator Paul is trying to do is soften some of the edges of his foreign policy views by, for example, expressing a great deal of loyalty and support for Israel, something his father was always questioned about, and by essentially saying that there's a broad middle ground here, as we were just discussing, and I'm somewhere in that broad middle ground. The problem that Republicans have is that when you get down to specifics, that he wants to close some overseas military bases, he wants to cut defense spending, he would reduce sometimes radically foreign aid programs even to people such as institutions such as Egypt and the Palestinian Authority, and those all have strong constituencies in the Republican Party. So it would be a hard pill for many in the party to swallow.
Thanks, Jerry. Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau Chief Jerry Seib. 11 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. Coming up next, job gains in May are higher than the recent average.
We help farmers make the best use of their land, which means healthier crops, higher yields, and less harvesting hours, which is good news for a growing population and good news for the environment. BASF, the chemical company.
Thanks for spending time with us. Will the new EPA rules give renewable energy a boost? As you may have heard, the EPA last week released a draft rule to regulate carbon emissions from hundreds of fossil-fired power plants across the U.S. The proposed rule mandates that power plants cut U.S. carbon dioxide emissions 30% by the year 2030, the first attempt at limiting such pollution. Reaction from Frank Pringle, CEO of Liberated Energy, based in southern New Jersey. Frank, what's your take?
Well, it's going to be very positive. There will be a real spike over the next 24 months in this, and then it'll continue because it's improving. The technologies on solar and wind are improving every 6 months. They're getting better. Eventually, in 2 to 3 years, I think every house should have definitely have solar and wind gadgets on it for some way to subsidize their electricity.
And what about about all the cost that some utility companies might incur?
Well, the power companies are going to have to go ahead and find technologies that meet the demands of our president and our government. And this is going to increase costs. I believe that we'll be about 30% more expensive in 24 months for electricity. Now, there are answers. There are answers besides all this, but let me just give you some statistics. Coal in the United States, we really have more bituminous coal than anything in the United States. And we have a tremendous amount of natural gas.
Right.
Coal, to produce 1 million kilowatts an hour of energy, it creates 2,250 pounds of CO2. That's the gas, the greenhouse gas. Natural gas, to produce the same amount of electricity, produces half as much CO2.
Mm-hmm.
And very little, if any, sulfur, and very little nitrogen. Nitrogen creates the nitric acid that affects everybody. But the reality, see, because I'm in energy and I've got some other patents, I've got like 20 patents, I was in China. China has coal. It's not as rich as our coal in the United States, so they burn more of it. And when I was there, every city I went to, there was a thick blanket of smog.
We're speaking with Frank Pringle. He's the CEO of Liberated Energy. You know, you make an interesting point about China because I know some of the arguments have been, why would the U.S. bother trying to tackle changing emission standards when China is this huge polluter and basically undoes every effort we would be doing?
Gordon, you're absolutely right. What's going on in China in India is affecting the world more than us. Our coal in the United States is like 80+% energy. And when I was doing experiments on the Chinese coal, it was like 64-65%. So they've got to burn that extra 20% more to get the same amount of electricity as a ton of our coal.
Right, right.
So therefore, the cities, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Beijing, smog, really thick. It makes L.A. look like it's a garden paradise.
Right.
That's how thick it is.
So do you support the EPA rule, or do you think the timing is poor? Do you think China needs to be involved? How do you see this whole thing?
Most definitely. What we got to do is convince the Chinese in India, take our technologies of scrubbers. In the next 24 months, what's going to be done in the United States, take these technologies that will evolve out of this program and get it there. If those two countries convert over to the same things that we have in the United States and we go ahead and make changes, then the world will be a better place. But it's got to be the whole world. It just can't be the United States because, yes, we use more electricity, but China has more people,
yeah,
and they're burning more and more coal.
Thanks, Frank. Frank Pringle, CEO of a company called Liberated Energy. 19 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. It is time for Gina Cervetti.
The May jobs report is a little better than what economists were expecting. U.S. employers added 217,000 jobs. The unemployment rate held steady at 6.3%. Professional services, healthcare, bars, and restaurants, along with transportation, saw the most gains. But the labor force participation rate was unchanged and matched a 36-year low. This next week, we'll watch for the government's monthly report on retail sales, and PNC economist Stuart Hoffman is predicting a rebound.
In the month of May, the weather was better. People got more jobs, so we're looking for an increase of around 4 or 5 tenths of a percent.
Next week also brings updates on consumer sentiment and small business sentiment. A new look at businesses' outlook on the economy shows continued improvement. For the first time since the recession, more than half of executives surveyed were optimistic about the U.S. economy, with 51% expressing that sentiment.
It shows some increase in the feeling that the economy is going to grow over the next 12 months, and you know, a lot of positive signs related to that.
Jim Blake is with the AICPA. Just over half of companies say they have the right number of employees right now. The number of companies planning to hire rose to 17% in the second quarter from 12% a year ago. General Motors says to expect more recalls in the coming months. The company has fired 15 people for misconduct linked to those faulty ignition switches. Disciplinary actions were also taken against 5 others, but some lawmakers aren't satisfied that actions go far enough. Watch for new Barnes & Noble Nook devices made by Samsung. The two companies say they've reached a deal for the South Korean electronics giant to make color tablets co-branded with the bookseller's Nook label. Barnes & Noble plans to start selling the new color Nooks in stores and online starting in August. It did not release a price yet. As we mark the 70th anniversary of D-Day, a U.S. flag from one of the thousands of Allied ships involved has just sold at auction for $350,000. An unidentified buyer won the auction at Bonhams in New York City, which also featured other World War II artifacts, including rare prints of the original series of Dow Jones bulletins with some of the first reports of the fighting on June 6th, 1944.
How about that? $350,000 for that flag? That's
a lot more, I guess, than what the presale prices had been set at.
Okay.
Substantially higher.
Well, it's nice to see that somebody takes that much interest in a World War II flag.
Well, I think that World War II memorabilia is very popular with collectors.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Gina. 22 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. Coming up next, work creates less stress than home, if you can believe that. Thanks for being with us. Ever feel you need to get back to the office on Monday so you can decompress from the weekend? Turns out work is the place many people say they go to relax, and research backs it up. Here's Wall Street Journal columnist Elizabeth Bernstein on coping with family stress. Elizabeth, what have you found?
I looked at new research that shows that people are, the majority of people are actually more stressed, significantly more stressed at home than they are at work. And it doesn't matter if this was true across a lot of variables. So it didn't matter if you were a parent or not a parent. It didn't matter your occupation, if you were single or married or had kids at home, job satisfaction, or even men versus women. Everybody pretty much feels more stressed at home than work, which was really kind of striking. The only difference is that people who earned more than $75,000 a year, and this study was done in a mid-sized city, but people who earned more than $75,000 a year in that city did feel better at home. So everyone else, more stressed at home, which is, what is going on there?
Is this stress or is this exhaustion? Because sometimes I'm exhausted from, you know, kids' activities all weekend long. But I guess to some people that might be stress, but that's not to me. That's not what I consider stress, I guess. But is that what's happening for some people?
Well, if you enjoy it, it's happening. It's exhaustion. But what they did, these researchers, is they studied cortisol levels, which was really stress. And so it's a stress hormone. They studied cortisol levels and showed, you know, again, across all these variables, that people had more cortisol when they were at work compared to when those people were at home. And so, you know, it could be that the exhaustion is bleeding off into stress at some point. You know, when you get tired, you know, we are much less resilient. That's happening. But there's a lot of reasons why these researchers and other psychologists I talked to thought that, you know, we actually feel a little better, less stressed, less sort of burnt out at work than in home.
Speaking with Wall Street Journal columnist Elizabeth Bernstein about, do we now go to work to relax? All right, so what is it? What are the reasons then?
First of all, there's an etiquette at work. You know, you have to show up. You have to behave appropriately. you don't have to, but if you don't, you know, you're going to lose the respect to your coworkers and probably your job. So no yelling, crying, snapping, slamming the door. We get paid. So, you know, not only that, but we feel appreciated at work. We get paid for it. You know, there is a, you know, sort of also an etiquette of, you know, being, if you're doing well, you know, being praised or promoted. And there's this idea that stress at home is contagious. So if you remember the old t-shirts, you know, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Yeah.
You know, so like there's this stress. It's really true. You know, if somebody in the family is stressed out, especially a parent, then it's going to carry across the board.
So what can you do here if you notice this is happening and you're listening to you and me speak here? What can we do?
You want to think about home a little bit more like work. Maybe emulate, you know, your work self a little bit more. So you want to set boundaries. You want to be able to say no to things. Some experts I talked to said that you want to help prepare your family. Schedule the time to do something fun. Take a real mental break and a physical break from everything you're doing, creating tasks for yourself.
Yeah.
So that's another one that I thought was interesting.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Wall Street Journal columnist Elizabeth Bernstein, who's based in South Florida. Another angle here to her piece. She writes that we get better at our job with time, hopefully. So the increased competence means less stress and more rewards at work. Yet none of us, no matter how long we've been doing it, ever truly feels like an expert at parenting or even at marriage. We're more likely to feel appreciated at work, according to one expert. At home, many of our efforts go unnoticed. And let's not forget, at work, we get paid. So she says, imagine giving your family an invoice. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. Coming up next, new technologies to help keep track of our aging relatives.
How easy is getting unlimited data outside the U.S. with T-Mobile? Just one step. Turn on your phone. Because with T-Mobile, unlimited global data in over 100 countries is automatically included in your plan at no extra charge. Sounds simple? It is simple. It's the simple choice for business plan, only at T-Mobile.
Qualifying service and capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobytes per second. No tethering. See T-Mobile.com for full feature terms and included destinations.
When I was pregnant, I got more advice than I knew what to do with. What I needed was information I could trust on how to take care of me and my baby. Luckily, United Healthcare has a simple program that helps moms stay on track with their doctors and get the right care and guidance before and after the baby is born. Simple is good right now.
Innovations that work for you. That's health in numbers. United Healthcare.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Coming up this half hour, the senator who shows up to speak at college graduation ceremonies, even though he's not the invited commencement speaker. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. There might be a less intrusive way to keep tabs on our aging parents, an alternative to cameras. Wall Street Journal reporter Shirley Wong has a look at new research employing the same radar technology used to catch speeders to best detect if an elderly person has fallen or runs the risk of falling. Shirley, how's this developing?
So falls in the elderly are a really big issue. They cause injury and also increase the risk of early death. And currently, the best methods for detecting falls are wearable devices and also cameras. But the problem is that wearable devices require the elderly to actually wear them and actually do something like push a button.
Right.
And oftentimes the idea of cameras seems like an invasion of privacy. So researchers are looking into using radar, which we all know, used by police, by military, by weather forecasting, which basically can detect certain kinds of movements and actions without actually visually looking at someone. So the idea would be that you could mount a radar, not even in the same room as an elderly, and you could figure out their patterns of regular movement so that when a fall happens, which is an irregular movement, you can actually detect that and quickly get treatment to the person, and in the future maybe even prevent falls by detecting it ahead of time.
Oh, geez, how would that work?
What happens is that the radar, sends electromagnetic waves, and it reflects off of people and moving objects at different frequencies and at different strengths. And what you want to do is basically figure out what's the pattern that is detectable when somebody actually falls. And so to do this, you actually want to basically capture a lot of people falling and figure out that pattern. Now, it's probably obvious that you wouldn't want elderly to actually fall in order to capture that pattern. So what happens is that researchers actually ask young, healthy people to basically mimic falls as best as possible, and they actually have to teach these young people to walk and to fall like an elderly person would, because everything from gait to posture to balance is different in young people versus older people. So once they capture this information that gives a sense of, what does a fall look like, the sort of science behind it is that the researchers develop an algorithm to best capture what a fall would look like, and then when the waves come back with that pattern, then an alert is sent out saying, hey, this person might have fallen. You better get help to them.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Shirley Wong. All right, so develop that a little more then. How are these alerts sent? What's the communication system?
It depends on different techniques. There are researchers who are already working with a different type of device using 3D sensors, similar to what you would find in an Xbox. And their system, which they already are piloting in an elderly residential facility, their alerts go via email. So if the person looks like they've fallen, an email and a snippet of a video is sent out. And the video is actually not a video that we're thinking about, like with a camera, but it's actually just a silhouette of the person. So privacy is still maintained. But the email alert and the snippet of the video is sent to the staff. The staff can quickly click on the link and see, the video. Did this person actually look like they fell? If that is what seems to have happened, then they send staff over immediately. And I talked to one of the residents who said this happened with his wife, who took a couple of different falls. And he said as soon as the fall happened, the alert went out, and he said people came running.
Thanks, Shirley. Wall Street Journal reporter Shirley Wong, who's based in London. 22 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. 'Tis the season to protect our pets from fleas and ticks. Don't worry, there's a segue here. You can never get enough dog lovers on this show. That's why we're joined now by Emmy Award-winning actor Eric Stone Street. He plays Cam Tucker on the hit show Modern Family. Eric, thanks for making a few minutes. What are you promoting here, by the way?
Oh, thanks for having me. Well, right now I'm promoting how your listeners can help some dogs in some animal shelters across America, thanks to a company called Mariel, who makes a product called NexGard. And all your listeners have to do is go to a website called 1millionstepsfordogs.com, commit to taking a 20-minute walk with their dog and unite against the fight against fleas and ticks. And Mariel's going to donate up to $1 million of product to select animal shelters across America. So it's a really easy step for your listeners, and it's a great opportunity for them to help some some dogs out in animal shelters.
Very good. How many pets do you have? You have at least one dog, right? A rescue dog?
Yeah, I have a dog named Coleman who I rescued about 11 years ago. But I grew up in Kansas with many dogs, many cats, many cows, many pigs and goats. I had a menagerie growing up as a kid. So animals have been an important part of my life since a very early age.
What kind of dog is he?
My dog's a Jack Russell Terrier Beagle mix.
Nice.
He's 50-50, actually.
Wow. Let's talk TV for just a minute. You've had this great run on Modern Family. How many more seasons are we looking at here? Any idea yet?
Well, we're contracted to do 8 seasons of Modern Family. Okay. When we renegotiated our contract 2 years ago, we gave another year of the contract. They originally signed you to a 7-year, so then we changed that to an 8-year. So that's what we're contracted to do, but who knows how long it'll go. We still sure enjoy making the show, and the studio and the network, I'm pretty sure, love the show. So, you know, great shows, which I think we are, have a reputation of going 9 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that will happen if everybody's on the same page and wants that to happen.
Good for you. What's the best part, by the way, of showing up to work every day to do that job?
Well, first and foremost, it's having a job. I was an actor for 13 years before Modern Family when I didn't know where I was going or what I was going to do or what my next gig was or where my next paycheck was coming from. So what first and foremost, it's nice to have income that I know is coming in and I don't have to worry about that. But just showing up and working with my co-stars and never knowing what our writers are going to create for the characters on the show to do is a really great honor and fun. But I just love having a place to go to do what I always wanted to do, and that's make people laugh.
Very good. We're speaking with actor Eric Stonestreet. He plays Cam Tucker on the hit show Modern Family. So that said, you sort of opened the door for me there. What would you do if you weren't acting?
Well, you know, I was going to school. I was studying sociology in college. I wanted to be a prison administrator when I was a kid. I grew up in Kansas City, like I said, and I was near Leavenworth, Kansas, and there's a lot of prisons there. And when I went to college, my parents told me to, you know, go study something that seemed interesting to me, and I was always fascinated with crime and punishment, so
wow.
I was studying criminal justice and was going to be a warden, but I'm glad that didn't work out for me. I'm glad I found the theater and found my, you know, got bitten by the acting bug, if you will.
How about that? That's a good story. So in the season finale here, you marry Mitchell. What's ahead for next season?
Boy, I wish I knew. Our writers just went back to work last week, so now they're starting to sculpt and create, you know, season 6. There's 24 episodes in a season, and there's always 3 stories in every episode. So they're hard at work right now. But, I think it's a funny notion that Cam and Mitch, you know, are kind of just become the resident old married couple and are experts on marriage. You know how people always seem to know more about things than you, and I think that would be a funny area for Mitch and Cam to explore. But we won't know. Inevitably, we get a call, or all of us get calls, and from the writers or producers saying, hey, by any chance, have you ever played the ukulele? And that always informs us, like, okay, well, what do they have coming for us? What are they thinking about?
Right.
So we'll show up and we'll find out what we're going to shoot for the first episode in late July.
You have one of the more clever job descriptions from your co-star, Jesse Tyler Ferguson. I hadn't seen that. I was looking at it a little bit before. He says that you are gay for pay on the show.
Yeah, I am gay for pay. I said I'm a homosexual. I'm not an actual homosexual. Jesse happens to be gay. I'm right. Not, but I'm honored to get to play the part that I get to play on TV and bring attention to the issue in marriage equality. It was a great momentous opportunity for us in our show to do that episode and to be that sort of cultural touchstone for people.
Good stuff. Hey, hashtag LA Kings for you, right?
Yes, sir. How about that game?
Nice. Well, I'm sort of a fair weather hockey fan, but I do love an overtime hockey game. That's for sure.
It's great. I'll tell you, I was a late comer to hockey. You know, I watched a little bit when I was a kid in Kansas City. We had the Kansas City Blades there, and then when I was really young, we had the Kansas City Scouts. But I got into hockey really about 4 years ago just because, you know, I had the opportunity to get season tickets to Dodgers and Kings in L.A., and I got into it before we made our run for the Cup in 2012. But I got to tell you, if you're not a hockey fan, just commit. Commit to watching some games, and if you don't get hooked by the hockey bug either, and you're a sports fan, there's something wrong with you.
So that makes 1, 2, 3 of you from Kansas who were born or raised near farms who are hockey fans.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I think I'm the fourth.
Very good. Hey, thanks for a few minutes. It was great talking to you. Eric Stonestreet plays Cam Tucker on the hit show Modern Family. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. America was built by innovators and dreamers like you. To celebrate, LegalZoom dedicated this month to innovation by making it easy for you to file trademark or copyright applications, incorporate your business, or form an LLC. Call or visit LegalZoom.com. They'll provide the personal attention you need and help take care of all the details. For a limited time, get a special price on trademark and copyright applications by using the referral code WSJ at checkout. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help, but they're not a law firm. Here's a question for you. Should ATVs have access to public roads? There's a groundswell of support for rule changes. Some of them say, hey, motorcycles have access. They're about as unprotected as we are. Wall Street Journal reporter Jim Carlton says more and more counties across the country have legalized the use of off-road vehicles on some public roads. In recent years, ATVs have been approved on streets and roads in states including Colorado, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin. He recently visited Meeker, Colorado, in the northwest corner of the state. Jim, explain the trend.
Yeah, what's happening is more and more rural counties in the western U.S. are legalizing all-terrain vehicles to ride on county roads along with automobiles and trucks. And that may sound crazy in cities, but in some of these very remote places like, you know, northwestern Colorado, they say that, you know, there are not many people using them anyway. And that, you know, if the ATV riders follow rules of the road, you'll have headlights, taillights, use turn hand turn signals, et cetera, that they can coexist just fine.
What are the reasons, Jim, that some are opposed to this?
There's two big points of contention on this. One is a safety concern. In fact, manufacturers, the people who make these machines, say they're adamant they don't want them used on paved roads. The county roads are both paved and unpaved, but I mean the manufacturers say that just they're not built for paved roads. They don't turn easily, so they can overturn, and it's just not safe.
All right, thanks, Jim. That is Wall Street Journal reporter Jim Carlton from Meeker, Colorado. It is 8 minutes before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. Once again, Gina Cervetti.
This coming week, we get some insight into inflation with release of the wholesale price data. PNC Stuart Hoffman says the run-up in producer prices might have slowed to around 0.2% following some big spikes the prior 2 months.
That would be tamer and maybe show that inflation remains well under control after a little bit of a blip in March and April.
Do you feel wealthy? The Fed says U.S. household wealth hit a record high in the first quarter, increasing by $1.5 trillion to almost $82 trillion.
Some of the main assets that American households have in their portfolios, stocks and the value of their homes, are going up.
The Journal's Neil Shah. We hope our teens really are buckling up when they're in the car and we're not with them to police them for seatbelt use, right? Well, a group called Safe Kids Worldwide says that more teens die in car crashes than from any other cause, and that half of those 2,500 fatalities not buckled up. President Kate Carr says teens use different excuses for not using their seatbelts.
They weren't driving that far. They thought they were close to home so that they could avoid buckling up, and yet most accidents occur near a home. The seatbelt was uncomfortable, or worse still, it wasn't a habit.
This survey was funded in part by the General Motors Foundation. A new Career Builder survey finds that more and more boomers are making up the majority of this workforce, while millennial employment opportunities have lagged. Brent Rasmussen is with Career Builder North America.
Younger professionals left the workforce in greater numbers, or they took lower paying jobs and did not utilize their college degrees that they had. And many actually opted to stay in school.
Younger workers that don't have the job experience on the resume yet need to be creative and showcase their talents in other ways. Use internships as stepping stones and also networking. Are you a Google Chrome user or sticking with Internet Explorer? New research from Adobe finds that Google wins the browser wars in the U.S. when you consider both its Chrome and Android use combined. What's interesting, though, is that Google does not make the most popular desktop browser or mobile browser. IE is tops in PCs. Apple's Safari is number one on mobile devices, but Google wins overall here because Internet Explorer has little presence on mobile and Safari has a small share of PCs default, but a lot of people that we know use Chrome now,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
IE is installed on a lot of computers at work.
Right. Yeah. Good distinction, though. Very good. Good stats. Thank you, Gina. 6 minutes in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend.
We help farmers make the best use of their land, which means healthier crops, higher yields, and less harvesting hours, which is good news for a growing population and good news for the environment. BASF, the chemical company.
As colleges go through the graduation ritual of commencement speeches, school officials in New York have been dealing with another ritual, the often unadvertised arrival of Senator Chuck Schumer. So far this season, he's made remarks on at least 8 campuses in the state. It's not all that taxing, since he often gives the same speech, in which he turned down a scholarship to travel abroad after graduating from Harvard to spend time with his then-girlfriend.
She dumped me by Labor Day. There I was. No scholarship. No trip around the world. No girl.
The lesson is, you can move forward and be successful in life when you've had setbacks, he says. He often appears on Sunday morning TV talk shows. A long-standing joke is that the most dangerous place in Washington is between Mr. Schumer and a microphone. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this weekend.
Traveling overseas for business comes with a checklist of things to worry about. But with T-Mobile, you can take getting international data off that list. Because with a simple choice for business plan, unlimited data in over 100 countries is automatically included at no extra charge. Only at T-Mobile.
Qualifying service and capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobytes per second. No tethering. See T-Mobile.com for full feature terms and included destinations.